Okay, thanks, John. Good afternoon, everybody. And I don't know about lunching and learning because everybody's stomach is so nervous that you might not be able to keep down lunch in this time, but it's certainly a challenge. So with me today is Judy Cahey, who is the leader of our tax department here at BSD, and Jim Lozano, who is the leader of our CFO for Hire division. Jim and Judy are leading our COVID-19 team to help our clients and other people like your folks, you folks out. We have a short agenda of topics that Judy's going to start with. There'll probably be questions. We've done this a couple of times. So what we're going to do is ask that you use the chat function to submit those questions, and we'll monitor that. You can find the chat on the bottom. If you scroll your mouse to the bottom of the screen, it's three buttons to the right. So, or from the right, rather. So with that, the only other additional suggestion we have is if everybody would mute their lines so we kind of limit as much background noise as we can. And then if we have enough time and question, we may be able to take some live questions at the end. But Judy's going to kick us off here. So Judy, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Ron.
Blessed.
Okay, so can you all see that screen?
Okay. Yes.
So we're going to talk to you today about three things. We're going to start with some charitable contribution changes that came about in the CARES Act last Friday with its enactment. We're going to talk a little bit in the way of employer tax changes and as they relate to the payroll protection program, which you'll be hearing much about. And then Jim will end with giving you the details of that forgivable loan program. First up, tax days postponed, but not for 990s due on May 15th. So they did go ahead, you know, we saw a notice come out that said April 15th deadline is postponed, but at this moment in time, they have not included the 990s that calendar year ends must need to file by May 15th. There's a little relief if you happen to be a fiscal year end and you have a 990T due in April, but in general, Form 990 itself, if you have a fiscal year end and it's due, it's still due because they deem 990s informational and actually not a tax return, so they didn't give you any relief at all there. Charitable contributions. So, you know, speaking to this group as not-for-profits, I wanted to share with you a couple of pieces of information that came out. One is on the C corporation side. So donors who are C corporations historically have only been able to contribute up to 10% of their taxable income, and they increased that effective for contributions that occur in 2020 to be 25%. Individuals at the time of the enactment of this law could contribute up to 60% of their adjusted gross income for cash charitable contributions to public charities. So this isn't a private foundation contribution, it has to be to a public charity. So they expanded the 60%, and again, it has to be in the form of cash, it can't be in the form of stock, to be 100% for contributions made and the tax year 2020. Then they came up with a brand new above the line individual deduction. So when you file your tax return for 2020, you're gonna see a brand new line item that basically allows for a $300 deduction. And again, that's cash. I think the other impact coming out of here in terms of the legislation and your charitable contributions are going to be on the qualified charitable distribution side, so QCDs. You know, and stepping back for a minute, we saw a little bit of change that happened in 2019 when the SECURE Act passed, because they said, you know, people no longer had to take required minimum distributions at the age of 70 and a half. They increased that to the age of 72. However, in doing that legislation, they said you can still make a QCD as long as you're 70 and a half. Well, because the market has been upside down and they wanted to give relief to people to let those investments get back up in value, they said anybody that's required to take an RMD in 2020 actually doesn't have to do so. They can waive that. So, you know, I do think that for those who otherwise allow that RMD to be a QCD, there's certainly an impact there. Employer tax provisions. So we have a brand new federal tax credit, and this basically goes with your 941 quarterly employer payroll tax return. So what they did is they said, look, there's an impact here to businesses, either businesses that are either fully or partially suspended due to a government order, or they've had their gross receipts have a significant decline, and they define that to be 50%. So if you're one of those two kinds of organizations, you can claim this brand new tax credit on your quarterly payroll tax return. Now, what it's refundable against is your 6.2% Social Security tax. And 501c3s specifically qualify for it. Now, you're going to hear a little bit later on from Jim that employers taking a loan under the payroll protection program, what those details are, but they don't allow you to double dip here. So if you're doing the PPP program, you are not allowed to take this credit as well. There's a calculation for this. So it's 50% of the first $10,000 you pay to an employee between March 13th and December 31st. So the credit basically is, if you're paying an employee at least $10,000, including their health insurance under a group plan, that you get a $5,000 credit per employee. And again, this is a quarterly calculation with your 941. Now, they sort of set the threshold differently for employers with under 100 employees versus over 100 employees. So if you have 100 or fewer employees, basically all of your wages are going to count for this purpose. But if you have over 100 employees, only the wages of the employees you're paying who are not currently working are eligible. So what they allow is the preferential treatment to those under 100 employees. Now, just last night, we saw some additional Q&A guidance came out that was a little bit interesting. And again, it's been a full week of developments in terms of learning new things and how these rules are going to apply. They have a new Form 7200 called Advanced Payment of Employer Credits. So they're allowing employers to go ahead and try to file that in advance of waiting to file their quarterly return to get some cash back. So let me give you sort of an example that they gave on the website. They said, look, if
hey,
you...
Judy?
Yeah?
Can you forward your PowerPoint presentation?
What screen are you seeing, Ron?
All we see is the first page.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I was wanted to say.
It's weird because it's showing it. It's showing it properly on my screen, so I'm a little bit not understanding. So let me do something a little different here.
What?
Can you see my screen now, Ron? Does it say delaying payment of Social Security tax? Is it showing properly now?
No.
No change, right? Still on slide three. There you go. You're on page eight now.
All right. I apologize for the glitch. It's not wanting to show my PowerPoint as I have it on my laptop. It's advancing on my laptop, but it's still hooked to a monitor, so you're not actually viewing the slideshow. So I apologize for that. But let me repeat this one more time with this slide up so you have a little bit of information in front of you. They're computing this based upon 50% of your qualified wages for that first $10,000 that you pay in salary between March 13th and December 31st. And again, the distinction here is qualified wages is going to depend on how big of an employer you are. If you're 100 or fewer, they're going to count all your employee wages. So $5,000 credit per employee. And then if you're more than 100 average full-time employees, they're going to only count the people who you are paying who are not currently working. So they made this a little bit more favorable to smaller employers. And again, what I was saying was they developed a new form 7200. So if you're in a situation where, let's say, you know, you're filing and you know that you have enough dollars on account to cover you for the quarter, and you want to, in the example they give on the website is, you know you're going to get one of these credits for $10,000 and your quarter is coming and you need to deposit $8,000 in federal employment, they say you don't have to deposit the $8,000 in that $2,000 extra that you have on account that you're anticipating as a refund. Go ahead and file the 7200 form and get that back. So I'd encourage you as employers to just take a quick look at the Q&A section on the employer credits if you're in a situation cash flow-wise where you want to see what those details are. The other new development here, and this just comes down to timing, is a delay in the payment of Social Security tax. So employers pay 6.2% Social Security tax, as do employees, and they also pay 1.45% Medicare tax, as do employees. So this is very much specific to the employer's share of 6.2. You cannot defer the employer's Medicare, and you cannot defer the submission of any employee payroll taxes. So what they're saying is, you take the amount that you would owe in 2020 in terms of Social Security, and you don't have to pay it. What you can do is you can pay 50% of it by December 31st of 2021 and 50% of it by December 31st of 2022. So this is allowing organizations to keep the cash for other purposes and postpone the timing of the payment on the 6.2%. And again, you're going to hear about this payroll protection program. You can't do both. You can't defer your payment of Social Security tax and take that credit as well. So I'm going to turn this over now to Jim Lozano, my colleague, who's going to talk to you about the Paycheck Protection Program loan. Jim, you're muted.
Sorry about that. So I think this is the loan that everybody's been reading about and hearing about. $350 billion that's out there for businesses to get them back up on their feet. The rules have been changing on this as recent as late last night at 10 o'clock. But I think we're finally very close to applications being accepted for this and disbursements to go out. So how much can I borrow? You can borrow up to 2.5 times your average monthly payroll. It's on here because this changed Judy has it right here. You can borrow 2.5 times the average monthly payroll for the trailing 12 months prior to what the loan date might be. So you go through and you take an average of those months, multiply it by 2.5 times, and that's the amount that you're eligible to borrow. You can borrow it through banks, credit unions. There will be some other lenders out there, but they will come in a second tranche, some fintech lenders and things like that. But right now, you pretty much have to go likely to the bank you have a relationship with. Theoretically, because this money is not guaranteed by you, it's being guaranteed by the SBA, theoretically you should be able to walk into any bank. But I think with the volume of loans that are going to go through, banks are going to take care of their customers first, and then you might see in the next 2 weeks or so you'd be able to do that. Who's eligible? You must have under 500 employees, and the way the rules are written, it is any business or any 501. Right now, it's any 501c3 that has under 500 employees. There are some additional rules that potentially could allow somebody with over 500 employees to qualify. You have to pass the small business test. The idea of these loans is for the majority of the loan to be forgiven. So if you borrow $250,000, the idea is that you're going to use that within your business to pay for payroll. The things that it's allowed to be used for is payroll, rent, utilities, and interest on mortgage payments. So the idea is that you would use this to keep your business running. And then if you prove that you've used that during an 8-week period, then you can have that loan. You can have that portion that you use during that 8-week period forgiven. The balance, if there's any balance left over because you didn't spend it, it will be a loan through the SBA that'll have a 1% interest rate. Payments can be deferred either between six months and 1 year, and the loan term will be 2 years on that. I just talked about the forgiven section. During that 8-week period after the loan's dispersed, it's really important that people keep good records of their payroll, everything that they've dispersed for rent, interest payments, and utilities. And one of the things that I've said as a joke about 17 times, it's not utilities as old people like me think about. It is a little broader than that. So utilities can include your typical utilities, gas, electric, telephone, internet, and then they also have a term in there called transportation. I believe what they're referring to, although there is no definition of transportation, I believe what they're referring to is if you pay for employees transportation to work, like a CDTA pass or something like that. So I just went through that. So this section on forgiveness that Judy has in there, it's a little bit of a complicated formula to explain in this, but a portion of the loan, your forgiveness reduction can be reduced if during that 8-week period you end up reducing your FTEs or you end up cutting people's pay by greater than 25%. Now, there is a special rule if you bring employees back and restore wages prior to June 30th, that could help you bring back some of that ability to have it forgiven. So we as a firm are working on some calculators to help people figure out what that amount would be, et cetera. You can go ahead, Jude.
That's it, we're to the
end. Oh, there you go.
Well, this is our website. We'd suggest that you take a look here. We've published a number of articles that Jim has developed and other members of our team that give details in respect to the SBA loans, the Paycheck Protection Program we're talking about, another loan program that's been part of this, which we didn't focus on today, but we're happy to take questions on, and that's the Economic Injury Disaster Working Capital Loans, some sick leave changes, some business interruption insurance development. So, you know, we have a number of different articles we've published regarding different topics that came about as a result of this.
And one of the things just in relation to this index that Judy just put up on the screen is that is being updated constantly with new information. Later today, we're going to have an article up there regarding retirement plans that gives you some information about how retirement plans have changed as a result of the crisis. So all you have, we have a COVID button, like she said, you go to that, you'll see the index and click the hyperlinks and it'll take you right to those articles.
So there have been some questions that have been we're answering in the chat session, the slide deck that Judy presented today. We will send over to John and Terry at the Community Foundation. They have their resource center on their website. I'm sure you could probably add it there, guys. Stacy just asked a question. Are you aware of banks that are accepting applications for the PPP program? Right now, the only bank in the country accepting applications is Bank of America, and they're doing that only for existing credit customers. So anybody who's not currently a customer of the bank with a loan at that bank can apply there. KeyBank just sent around here locally about a half an hour ago, 45 minutes, that their portal and application will not be up. That's the same. We understand the same thing to be true for M&T, Berkshire, and Chase, that their sites, online sites, will not be up. Other banks, there's several banks in the area that are not participating in the loan programs. And there are several banks that are paper-based. We have seen information from Pioneer and Adirondack and NBT, but again, those were yesterday. Haven't seen anything from them today. So we've got a group of here, about 18 folks. If you wanted to ask a live question, just take yourself off of mute. Thank you for doing, keeping them on mute. But if you had a question you wanted to ask, please jump in.
Hello.
So, yes, go ahead.
Hello. My name is Valerie, and I am a nonprofit organization in New York. We are Thoroughbred Racehorse Retraining and Homing Program, and we also work with veterans and first responders in our area. And I'm wondering if sort of veteran funding that might be available to our program, to our organization.
So you broke up a bit on that. I think the question, I think we heard your Saratoga War Horse, you work with retraining horses and you work with veterans.
No. We're not Saratoga War Horse. Our organization is called Act Naturally. And we
Okay, so the question, your question focuses around are there veterans or rules for veterans organizations?
If there's any funding that might come that's going towards veterans organizations.
Right, Jim, I know there's some in the PPP program that's allowed for certain veterans organizations, right?
Yeah. It's 501. Let me take a quick look.
I think it's 19, C19. Yeah.
Hang on 1 second. Yeah, 501C19s.
Okay. So those are
right. Well, we haven't heard of any direct other than that. Being able to be participating in the PPP program, we haven't seen anything as far as grant sources to help organizations like that as a result of this crisis yet, except, of course, pitching the Community Foundation's fund that they're working on. But I don't know, John or Terry, do you have you heard of anything like that?
This is John. I have not.
All right, and you did mention Adirondack Trust, yes?
Yeah, Adirondack Trust has sent information to their borrowers, but we don't think they're accepting applications yet. And we think it's going to be paper-based.
All right.
The best suggestion we have is reach out to your banker and they can help you directly.
Okay. Super.
Brian,
thank you so much for all this.
You're welcome. Brian has a question. Can you use PPP if you have an existing grant that will reimburse the same payroll? Yeah, that's a good question.
Uh-huh. So I have gotten that question a couple of times. I think it's a longer conversation than a short answer. Because here's, Brian, the way that I think I would view it in a discussion with a client is if you are a 501c3 and this money is available to you and you feel like you need it to succeed, but then you find out that I think you have to go to your granting authority to ask them about it, you know, whether you can. It really would come down to the question of, can you use that same payroll for forgiveness? That's the real question. You're eligible to go ahead and get this. I think the question comes down to, can you use that same payroll for forgiveness? And if the answer is no, then my question to you would be, okay, do you mind having this loan outstanding at 1% to help you to continue to succeed after this crisis clears? That's how I would answer that question right now. Yeah. But I think you have to, and I know it's a dangerous game, but I think you have to ask your funding source how they would view it.
Right. Yep, that's where I would go too. Okay, any other questions? Okay, John, any other comments as we close out?
None from me. Thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it. And thank you for also recording this, and we'll send it out to folks. And if we have any other follow-up questions, we'll try to help facilitate getting answers. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, and I guess I would one final caution, right? The rules change, it seems like, every hour. So there could be things that we said here in the last 35 minutes that are different by 1 o'clock. So great big caveat to say, check your local listings, you know, keep current with what you, with the sources of information from the SBA or around the particular the PPP program. Things are changing. There are still more questions than answers. And check with your bankers, check with the SBA for the most current information. So thanks everybody for joining us. And if you have any questions, there's a lot of information on our website, a lot of information on the Community Foundation's website. I would check those two places if you have other questions. So be well, stay healthy. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.